Like the pine trees lining the winding road, I've got a name. I've got a name.
Proud to be Calgary's only 24/7 all sports radio, Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
I've got a name. I've got a name. And I carry it with
wipe that smile
like
off your
daddy
face.
Did.
But I'm living the dream that he kept here.
Moving me down the highway. Rolling me down the highway.
Moving ahead
so life won't pass me by.
Jason says, wasn't this in Django? It was in Django, and I think it was in that, what was that Mark Wahlberg, I'm a football player movie?
Invincible.
Yeah, Invincible. I think it was in Invincible as well.
Is that the Philadelphia wide receiver story?
Yeah, whatever it is.
Some dude in a pub makes the Eagles? Must have sucked.
Well, they did. The artist of the day, the irreplaceable, Jim Croce.
I just pulled up a photo of said Jim Croce.
Yes, he's dead.
Huge duster on him. Big old cookie duster.
To the people, it's not John Denver. Text line feels it's John. No.
No.
Sunshine on my GD shoulders. John Denver. No, wrong guy.
No, that's not right.
Although he is also dead.
No.
No, this is...
All your friends are passing away on you.
Yeah, all my...
Jim and John...
See, this is the magic of music. All of he is, of course, passed away, died in a plane crash, 73? Right? Well, it says right there. Look on looking on Wikipedia. Born, died. Go down.
On Thursday, September 20th, 1973.
Do you know how to use...
He died. The pilot, as well as comedian George Stevens, a manager and booking agent.
I don't care who else died.
Oh.
When?
He just completed a concert at Northwest State University.
I'm going to ask one more time.
September 20, 1973.
There we go. So he...
Wow, that was a while ago.
Yeah. So he's been dead. Died before I was even born.
41 years ago.
Yeah. Died at 30. But listen to the gift that he's given us. What a what a tremendous gift bestowed upon us by the great Jim Croce.
Down the highway.
960 CFAC, the home of country music. There is Jim Croce, 705. Good morning.
What?
I'm just looking at our sign. There would have been a time back in the 70s when that's exactly what you would have heard on this very frequency.
Can I get that one more time with a little more twang?
Well, you got to do it over the end of it.
Mm. Next
can't,
song?
Can't do it cold.
Can we do it for Brunt?
Yeah, maybe. It is now a sports talk radio, apparently.
Well, not yet. One more item.
All right.
That plane crash. At first, they thought it was fog, and then further investigation. Mm-hmm. Pilot error. Clipped a pecan tree. At the end of the runway.
Yeah.
It's not his favorite nut. It's too bad. Not supposed to be a joke, but that's a tough break right there.
Yeah, well, dying is generally not a good day.
Good for record sales, bad for living.
Coming up, Stephen Brunt will join us. We'll see if he's as excited as you about the arrival of Aaron Sanchez.
I think he will be. I am wagering that he will be enthusiastic about the debut of Aaron Sanchez at the Major League level.
We talked earlier this morning, and again, I'm stealing it, which is a lot of what it is. You steal things. They steal your garbage.
Exploded bag of garbage.
The Colorado Avalanche, Ryan O'Reilly, going to salary arbitration. An independent arbiter is going to decide what kind of money Ryan O'Reilly should be making in Colorado. I think it's a mystery for a lot of people watching this unfold, why a team would just be going nose to nose. And I mean, they're saying all the right things. We think Ryan O'Reilly's a great player. He's a big part. He's a core guy. We love him. Stop. Ryan O'Reilly. Oh, I love it here. Love Denver. love being an Av. No other place I'd rather be.
Then you shoo the media out the door. It's like, screw you! You screwed us first! Screw you!
And then it's just kicking each other to the junk and sweatering each other and uppercuts.
This feels like a pay-per-view cage match between the Avs and O'Reilly, does it not? There's history, there's revenge, there's storylines, there's deceit. This is Vince McMahon orchestrated nearly.
So O'Reilly wants $6.75 million. The Avs want to pay him $5.525 million, which really is a little bit closer than I think a lot of people expected. But this, boy, if they're going to salvage anything in terms of a relationship, they need to solve it before they go indoors. Before they go into that arbitration meeting, they got to get it solved.
No way that happens.
And I don't see that happening. So this, and again, what I'm stealing is from good guy Kent Wilson. He's on Twitter. Follow him.
Yeah, Kent's a great follow for Flame stuff.
He's a lot of Corsi in that, but if you can get by that, and I'm having fun at his expense. Good guy, smart guy, good read, good reporter.
Not afraid of numbers. Actually, a very nice human.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The what he threw out is he said, well, would if you were the Calgary Flames, would you, and again, I'm getting ripped because we were talking about it, was my thing. Boomer, this is, if you've been smoking, this got to be hands down one of the most outlandish proposals you've ever made. No, I didn't make it. I'm just stealing it. Would you trade Sean Monahan for Ryan O'Reilly? The Avalanche are a budget team, not a cap team.
They are
not a cap team.
Have not been. Maybe things change because obviously last year was the big turnaround year. Maybe they start filling that thing 41 times a year. But you're right. They
don't
have not been a cap team. They have not.
Don't bet on it.
Broncos are big. They're number one there.
They have McKinnon. They have Landeskog.
Duchesne.
They have Matt Duchesne.
Varlamov, Vezina candidate.
And they have a need on the blue line. If they want to be paying more $6 million contracts, they'd probably rather do it to somebody on the blue line than another forward. So with all of that said, would you entertain a Sean Monahan, if you're, this is the Flames now, would you do Sean Monahan for Ryan O'Reilly? What is Ryan O'Reilly? 23 years of age, he's a centerman, he's 6 foot, 200 pounds. Last year had 28 goals and 64 points and 2 penalty minutes.
It's really just stunning. Elliot Friedman went on a rant about it, how phenomenal it is to do his job with 2 penalty minutes over the course of a full season. A single penalty.
Playing in every scenario.
Shutting down other teams' top lines.
And I would say, and I know that the one thing that people say is, no way. Look, where was the one here? Not Monahan. I'd trade Brody for O'Reilly. O'Reilly, Monahan, and Bennett through the middle for the... Well, let's just say you're not getting it for Brody. Brody's not the one here. You need to sacrifice Monahan for him.
Well, that's the argument. That's the starting point.
That's what we're
talking
about.
I don't mind what he's saying, but the question was, would you do it, Monahan for O'Reilly?
And some are saying no chance, no way. He had, 20 goals as a rookie. So what are we talking about? This would be my question to everybody who has that kind of thought process. No chance. No way are we trading him. He had 20 goals as a 19-year-old. So do you expect then by the time he's 25, he's a 40-goal guy? Or
is he a top 10 league scoring guy, or is he a 20 every year guy?
Or is he did he have a great year and now teams are going to dial into him and there's going to be more attention on him? I would say, if anything, if I was to put money down, and this is, I'm not trying to be negative about it, I would say he probably gets fewer goals next year than more.
There's a couple of reasons why. A, he's going to be asked to do more, and that means playing against tougher opponents. They sheltered him very nicely. They put him on the ice in situations to succeed, as they should in his rookie year. And B, his shooting percentage, those are things that even out over a career. Guys have high years, low years. Or what? Chris Higgins couldn't buy a goal the year he passed through here. Bounced back with a big goal season in Vancouver when he landed there. Those things even out over a career. He's not going to continue to shoot at, 16 to 20% shooting percentage. That's crazy. So he's going to have to create more chances to come up with the same number of goals. Is it plausible he'll do that? Absolutely. I wouldn't be surprised if he has the same or lower goal total either. Now, long-term, I think he'll absolutely eclipse his rookie mark. But remember, Dion Phaneuf, 20 his rookie year,
yes,
right? Did he ever get 20 again?
No, not close. And again, position, I get it.
It's not You're apples not gonna... to apples, but it's just a little something to think about.
The point being that not always, in fact, I would say hardly ever, do players substantially increase if they have 20 goals in their rookie year. Does it translate? Well, he's going to be a 40 goal guy. Would you? Because I would think if in 4 years, when Monahan turns 23, would you not be thrilled if he's Ryan O'Reilly? I think you all would.
Absolutely, you would. Yeah,
flirting with 30, just any situation, all of that.
He put a letter on his chest.
I almost wonder
plays against other teams' top lines. It's a very valuable asset.
I feel in some ways like we overvalue some guys who play here and undervalue a little bit.
It's the basis of being a fan, right?
Because I wonder if Ryan O'Reilly is a little bit underappreciated.
Here or in Colorado?
Not in Colorado. I think they know what they got in Colorado, in spite of the fact they don't want to pay him.
Yeah, they maybe don't like his agent and his negotiation tactics, but they love the player.
960-960 on the fan feedback line. Some interesting things coming in. Monahan is a Flame through and through. Ryan O'Money is only worried about money and has no ties to the team.
Okay, there's something there, but once you get a guy on a contract, let's say he comes over, you give him 6x6. Cap's going up forever. We like him at this number. That locks him up till he's 30. No more negotiation. Don't worry about it. Now you just have the player. You love the player. And you don't have to talk to his agent for 5 years, 6 years, right?
Yeah.
Perfect. Now, I'm not saying I would do this because there's one area that we haven't talked about yet that would stop me from doing it. But let's understand that what he does on the ice is much more important than how easy it is to come to terms with him. You get a long-term deal done, maybe pay a little more, get some term, then you've got a great player.
Now, this one here, it says, if the Flames were maybe a year away from contending, I'd say yes, but I see the Flames to be 4 to 5 years away from being a legit team, and O'Reilly is a terrific player. Now, let's say it's 4 years.
27.
He'll be 27.
Yeah.
Entering his prime in many respects. I mean, 25, 26, whatever, take your pick, wherever players enter their prime. I'd be fine if we were competing and if we were in the playoffs and competing for division titles or whatever, and I had a 27 or 28 year-old Ryan O'Reilly. Who says Ryan O'Reilly didn't exceed expectations too? Well, there's more of a body of work.
Sure
in
is.
In his rookie year, he had 26 points and 8 goals. The following year, 13 and the same number of points, but 13 goals, then 18 goals. Last year, 28 goals. He has gone up every single year. You have 4.5 years.
Very durable. Hardly misses any games. And you look at his last two full seasons, 55 points, 64 points, plays against other teams' top line, physical, doesn't take penalty minutes. I wouldn't do it, though. You know why? Right along the lines of that last conversation. Who's going to be the goaltender when this team goes to the playoffs? We don't know. Right? We don't know. Who are the guys you can count on as core players? When they're going to contend. Well, let's say that they get a deal done with Giordano. That's probably probable. I said the same
probably,
thing twice.
Probably, yes.
Very likely that happens, I imagine. Great fit, captain, leader, loves it here, and they love him. No one would be shocked if Mark Giordano signed a contract extension in the next couple of years that kept him a Flame for a while. TJ Brody's flirting with that core player discussion. I think you have to think about Johnny Gaudreau moving forward. Could be one of those guys, hasn't proved it yet. But young, all these, you've got one old guy and a bunch of really young guys. And Ryan O'Reilly isn't old, but Monahan's younger. You got to think about Bennett, and you've got to think about the guy they're going to draft this coming summer, a year from now, because they're probably going to have another top five pick. Those are going to be your core guys. I like Monahan because he lines up age-wise with those guys. And I think his offensive upside is a little higher.
You think Monahan has more offensive upside than Ryan O'Reilly?
I do. I think at the end of the day, O'Reilly will be a better checker and defender. 1 minute left of the game, we got a one-goal lead. Put that guy on the ice. But Sean Monahan is going to be a guy that leads his team in scoring a lot. And O'Reilly's...
You really think Sean Monahan's going to be I'm going to lead the Flames in scoring?
I think he will a couple times for sure. Now, whether they get McDavid in next year's draft or Eichel or someone else, or you see the emergence of Johnny Gaudreau as a point producer... I just think you could count on Monahan flirting with a point per game later in his career. I really do.
I don't see him that way, even though he's going to be a very important part of this team. And I, for the sake of this, I probably wouldn't do it either. And I think it has more to do with, like you say, the fit, the group, who he is as a player and as a person, And the other guy is clearly pretty caught up with dough. And I don't know the guy. And I'll be honest, I've not talked to anybody who knows the guy. Maybe he's the greatest guy in the world and he's just done with Colorado, so he's trying to get out. I don't know. But it does look selfish. And I just don't want any part of that around this team. You're going through a rebuild. Bennett seems to be great character. Monahan is great character. I love watching the way, and again, it's little things, right? But watching Monahan and McGrattan, they're like a buddy cop movie. They hang out together.
It's like his dad. He's got his own personal security guard.
It's just very, it feels right. You know what I mean? It feels like they have something intangible coming together, and I don't know if I'd want to flirt with that.
The other thing, Sean Monahan makes less than $1 million a year. Now, there's some bonus things in there, but for the savings and for when O'Reilly hits unrestricted free agency, if he's interested in paydays, and he has been, he's going to want to see UFA summer. Know what I mean?
Mm.
You've got Monahan rights forever. You only got O'Reilly for another 2 years before he's a UFA.
Yeah. But I guess because I mean, we're stretching the limits to even get into the conversation.
I agree, but it's just say one more tiny little check mark for Monahan. Yeah. He's cheaper. He's more controllable. You own the asset for longer. It's another little check mark for why I wouldn't do it.
Are you guys nuts? We're in the middle of a rebuild. Monahan is a cornerstone going forward, and the goal for next year is to finish bottom five, preferably bottom two, not a team that just misses the playoffs.
I agree with everything that guy says.
And I don't think trading the one for the other makes them flirting for the playoffs. I don't think Ryan O'Reilly comes in here and all of a sudden they're 12th or 11th. I don't see that. And this would be the other side. It's funny how quickly people will fall in love with rookies. This is why fans are fans. We don't decide who stays and goes. O'Reilly's 23. Make the deal. Monahan will dwindle. Do you honestly believe Monahan will be worth $6.5 million in a couple years? Don't think so.
Here's a good little case study that, because of what we're talking about, we've seen 1 year and we loved it. People in this city, what were your expectations for Monahan? He blew them out of the water. The discussion out of camp was, should he stay, right? And at the end of the year, of course he should have been up. But rookie year, Jeff Skinner, 2010-2011, 31 goals. Next year, 20. Next year, 13. Got back to 30-plus last year. There's no guarantee, because he had 22 last year, that he's going to have 24, 26, or 30 next year. He might regress just like Skinner did, at least in that one offensive category. Now, I'm sure people in Carolina would tell you he's a more well-rounded player. He battled through some injuries there. But point being, there's no guarantee that Jeff Skinner is going to get 30 every year, even though he did when he was 18.
Apparently I'm anti-Monahan now, because I'm talking about, you know, would you do this kind of a trade?
No, you're asking a question because it's July and we want to talk hockey. People are like, talk Flames. Oh, okay, we're talking Flames.
It's his new Backlund. It's not my new Backlund. Let's settle down. He's already got more goals than Backlund has ever had in a year.
Outscored Backlund last year. Yeah.
720. We'll come back with Stephen Brunt. We'll get into, I'm sure he'll want to talk a little bit of CFL.
Mm.
What the Ottawa thing? Was there any part of you watching the Sol? Well, did you watch any? You didn't watch it. With what happened in Ottawa with the Red Blacks? You didn't watch the Stampeders. Why would I ask you about the Red Blacks?
It's been a busy couple weekends.
Yeah, I know. You've been very busy. You know,
coaching conferences.
Very busy.
Networking.
Yeah.
Out of town.
My
hotel didn't have the Comedy Network. I couldn't watch it.
Zip it. Is there part of you that felt kind of good about that Ottawa Red Blacks scene? Full house. They get the win. Did you feel, even though you may have no ties, and I certainly don't, I don't care about Ottawa one bit, but it felt pretty cool. I was happy for the people of Ottawa to finally have that moment with their Canadian Football League team. 721, Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Proud to be Calgary's only 24/7 all sports radio. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Oh, could you help me place this call? See the number.
Seriously.
Matchbook is old and faded.
How great is this?
960 CFAC.
Living in LA.
With my best old
ex-friend Ray. Stephen Brunt, brought to you by Eastside Kia. And it's no bull. Receive 0% financing up to 84 months combined with up to $4,000 in discounts. Get a 2014 Rio automatic, just $16,380. Visit eastsidekia.ca. Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning.
Feels like a good morning, doesn't it?
Oh, well, yeah. I feel like I'm watching the Midnight Special or something.
Little Jim Croce.
Yeah.
On the AM radio box.
On your AM radio box.
And welcome to 1973. the Toronto Blue Jays, they lost yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
What a time for a... Just exactly what Alex Anthopoulos needed, right? In the middle of this now, we're four games back of the division lead, and we've got some injuries, and it looks like our rotation is starting to kind of get, well, certainly the bullpen, and then you get blown up at home in front of a division rival. Not exactly the best timing.
Yeah, division rival is playing really well in the last 2 weeks. You know, that's kind of creeping up behind you. So it's, it kind of feels like we're a tipping point moment here. And, you know, it's hard to say that in a 162-game season because, you know, you tend to overreact positively or negatively sometimes with baseball, and it's not the right thing to do with the long season. But that beatdown last night, Brad Mills being thrown in there, who is one of these, you know, kind of a desperation pickup, I think, in a lot of ways, and a guy who's been awful. And guess what? He was awful again coming in for Drew Hutchison last night. And just, that sense that the Boston Red Sox, who were dead a month ago or 6 weeks ago, maybe not quite dead, and that the Jays are grasping at straws. And we just get the news now that Aaron Sanchez has been called up. So Sanchez and Ryan Goins are called up, but obviously Sanchez is the news. So, you know, this season is going to, you kind of get the feeling that the direction of this season is going to be decided between now and the trade deadline, which is July 31st. And, I'm not part of that kind of the pitchfork and torch brigade that's, you know, delights in things going badly and starts talking about who's going to get fired and all of that. But that, if things go badly in the next 2 weeks, that's the conversation. And that will be the conversation for the rest of the year. It's not going to be about, you know, can you play meaningful games in September? It's going to be about blowing things up and blowing up the front office and, first of all, probably blowing up the field manager, John Gibbons. So a lot of stuff hanging in the balance right now.
But the savior's here, Stephen. Aaron Sanchez will save the day.
Well, you know, Aaron Sanchez will be a nice piece in the bullpen. He's a hard-throwing right-hander in the bullpen, which they desperately need. And there's a role there for somebody to do that. Dustin McGowan hasn't been very good of late. The bullpen, which has been was a strength last year, has been one of the weak points. You know, and it's, you know, again, a lot of things haven't been played out the way people thought they were. You know, Drew Hutchison on the side last night, the starting rotation's been pretty good. But, you know, especially since the injuries, even before the injuries hit, they haven't been scoring runs, and the bullpen's been a mess. And, you know, I think because of what Marcus Stroman has done, you know, they're probably a bit emboldened about bringing up these young pitchers. I think you're going to see Daniel Norris, too. You know, he's in Double-A right now, and he may be the guy they promote to take Sanchez's place in Buffalo. I don't know that announcement's been made. But, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if you see Norris, Sanchez, Stroman, and Hutchison, you know, all guys who are under 23 years old, pitching for the Toronto Blue Jays before this season's out, you know, whether or not they're contending. I think that's their best option right now.
It is, isn't it? I mean, let's be honest, because what other option is there?
Well, there's all kinds of guys floating around, you know, but...
Are they any good? Do they legitimately make them better for what you'd have to pay to get them?
Well, there's two questions, right? A, number one, do they legitimately make them better? Well, yeah, David Price would make them better.
Okay.
But I don't think they're going to get David Price. I don't think Tampa's necessarily going to trade David Price because they're not that far out of it right now. And, you know, even with David Price, you would probably have to weigh, the cost would be enormous, right, in terms of prospects. If you look what, you know, Samardzija went for. You know, are there a bunch of other guys who might make them better? Well, maybe, but a lot of them are going to be these kind of marginal, not season changers, but guys who are kind of role players. And in that case, maybe you're better having a young guy with a tremendous arm and a tremendous upside rather than some middle-of-the-road journeyman guy who, you know, may or may not do the job and probably isn't going to change the season for you. So, you know, I think the Stroman thing kind of proves... So there's the upside, that you get a guy like Stroman who, after a couple of shaky outings in the bullpen, settles down in the starter's role and arguably right now is their best starter. You know, there have been other guys who have come up and imploded. But I think, you know, again, I think they'll use Sanchez cleverly. I think they'll spot him. I think they'll use him as a, you know, kind of not in high leverage situations right off the top. But, you know, very quickly, if he's effective, he's going to be, he'll be their right-handed setup man. And, you know, beyond that, you know, I think he'll be starting by the end of the year. And when, you know, maybe spot starts, maybe, you know, maybe more than that. You know, we may be about to witness the beginning of the transition, which would mean that in the offseason they'll be shopping Mark Burley and they'll be shopping R.A. Dickey, and they're going to go with the young guys in the rotation. But, you know, the question then becomes, and this is, you know, it's a tough one, but, you know, is that transition going to be Alex Anthopoulos's, or is it going to be his successors?
How could it not be Alex Anthopoulos's? I would argue the biggest problem the organization has had is this wishy-washy commitment from ownership on how much money they have. You've got a company with billions in revenues, and yet players are cobbling together money to try to get Irving Santana to come when it was clear to everyone in the majors they needed a starter. Is it on Alex or north of Alex?
Well, except that they did. It turns out they didn't need a starter. You know, like, it would have been great to have him, but that's not been the issue. And, you know, the counter argument to that, and I could, you know, which will be made in the Rogers boardroom, I can guarantee you, is the Toronto Blue Jays have the 10th highest payroll in baseball. And, you know, in return for spending that money last year, they were essentially promised that this team would contend. And last year they had the 10th highest payroll in baseball, or the 9th highest payroll in baseball, and finished last. And this year, with $130 million payroll, they're in free fall. So the notion that you would then throw good money after bad, you know, remember, they've got a lot of money tied up for next year still. You know, the Reyes contract is back-ended. The Burley contract is back-ended. You know, they can, there's some shuffling they can do, and they could stay around that number. But, you know, the ownership did spend the money, and it didn't work. So they're going to be skeptical about spending more, especially if it's long-term money. And, you know, that's the problem, is that decision, that trade, the money that was invested, the Marlins trade, the R.A. Dickey deal, that's all on Alex. And if it doesn't work, you know, if they do not contend, I can almost guarantee you that he'll be fired.
And it's a tough business, because not always do guys get fired because they should be fired. When mm-hmm. when you think back, the deal with the Mets for Dickey, maybe controversial, right? Well, he's older. It's, yes, Cy Young, but he's a knuckleballer. How's that going to translate? Everybody thought it was a pillaging of the Marlins in the Burley Reyes deal.
Yep.
So
yeah.
I mean, if we're going to look at the body of work, I don't know if we need to give it a letter grade, but what's he guilty of doing, and where does he deserve praise?
You know, he's guilty of going for it when he thought he had an opportunity, and when something was presented to him, and he did the right thing. And again, you can try and Monday morning quarterback those two deals if you want, but, you know, the fact is, at the time, everybody thought it was the right thing to do, because, you know, you've got a window of opportunity when you've got Bautista and Encarnacion. There's a 2 or 3 year window here, and you know, you don't get many chances to go for it. You know, I remember this spring talking to J.P. Ricciardi, his predecessor, about that. You know, about how it's, you can't go for it every year. You know, I guess you sort of can if you work for the Yankees, but, you know, even, you know, realistically, they're not going for it at this stage, right? They're going to have a down year. But, you know, if you're the guy managing running the Toronto Blue Jays, and yeah, you have a big rich corporate owner, but, you know, you're not going to just be able to go up in payroll every year. You've got to kind of pick your spot and say, okay, this is where I play my cards. And he did it, and I think it was the right thing to do, even if it doesn't work out. And I think I would have done the same thing, but it doesn't mean you won't get fired. And I say the same thing about John Gibbons. You know, the hiring, you can argue the hiring all you want, but I don't think what's happened is John Gibbons' fault. I think he's managed the team pretty much the way everybody else would have managed it. He's made the same kind of decisions pretty much everyone else would have made. And I think the guys play for him, you know, to the degree that that matters in baseball. But, you know, he's the first guy out, right, because he's expendable. But the Alex thing, again, he knew what he was doing. He knew what it meant. He knew what the consequences would be if it didn't work out. I can tell you that for a fact.
Chatting with Stephen Brunt here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan, I want to kind of just shift it up for you a little bit. For no real reason, I sat on Friday night and watched the Ottawa Red Blacks playing at home. And I was cheering for the Red Blacks.
Yeah.
I was cheering for their fans. I was cheering for their owner. I was cheering for Henry Burris. It felt right. It felt great. I have no attachment to Ottawa. We talk about the Senators all the time. I don't know how you're a Senators fan. If you live in Western Canada and your son isn't, you know, Daniel Alfredson, I don't know how you're cheering for the Ottawa Senators.
Yeah.
But there's something about it. I don't know. I mean, would you buy a Red Blacks hat today? Yeah, maybe I would. I lovable little Red Blacks. Felt good for them.
Yeah, I did too. You know, and I watched. Well, I kind of wanted to see what it looked like in that stadium too, and it looked great. You know, it wasn't a great football game, but you know, it was close at least. So that made it good. It has not been. I would say qualitatively, this has not been the greatest start to a CFL season ever. But yeah, I you know, I'm from Hamilton. I cheer against the Argos no matter who they're playing. But yeah, I was happy to see them get rewarded with a win in the first game at home. I was, you know, and God love Henry Burris. You know, I'll tell you, in Hamilton right now, there's a fair number of people who would like to have him back, even understanding the risk reward that is always going to be Henry Burris. But you know, given the quarterback play they've had there, they would have taken it, because I guarantee you they wouldn't be 0-3 right now if Henry Burris is playing. But no, it's a nice story, and you know, they're not going to be very good this year, but they're not going to be terrible. And everybody else in the East seems to be some level of terrible right now. So it's not out of the question they make the playoffs in their first season back, and you know, that would be good. It'd be good for the league. You know, you don't want that team buried and hopeless in its first year, which I think is the thing they kind of missed with the Renegades expansion, which was, you know, yeah, we'll let them in and we'll take their money, but we're not going to give them a chance.
Mm-hmm.
At least they gave these guys a chance. And it's, you know, I think there's smart football people involved. I think there's smart front office there. And, you know, that's the way it should be. We all, in some ways, you know, if you care about the CFL kind of holistically, you should want these guys to succeed, because if they succeed, it's good for the league.
And Henry Burris in no way should justify his large salary given on one night. But you could see why they got him. Because he led that team. He's a face of that franchise. You know, he's fist pumping to the crowd after the game. And he's the only thing they got right now. I mean, Siobhan Walker, but he's their leader. It's absolutely clear.
Well, and the thing is, you know, even at this, you know, advanced age for a quarterback, the guy still has a crazy good arm. You know, he can still make plays on his own. You know, there's stuff he can still do. And again, everybody knows that on some level he will eventually break your heart. But, you know, that you've got a guy, to have a guy in that role who is a playmaker who can lift that cast a little bit and some nights can do crazy good things, rather than, say, struggling with a guy who maybe 2 years from now will be good, you know, breaking in a young quarterback. You know, I think it was absolutely the right decision to go with, you know, to go with experience. Again, if you look at what the Renegades did, you know, where, and the kind of, you know, they eventually ended up with Kerry Joseph, I believe, right? But he was a converted defensive back, right? They had a bunch of guys who never really played. And I think getting Henry Burris, paying him the money, and saying, you know, at least we've got that, which means that on a lot of nights we're going to be watchable, I think that was a really smart move.
I'm just going to double back one last time. And I know, in terms of Anthopoulos, because it just kind of came to me, in terms of Anthopoulos or Gibbons, if the writing is on the wall for both of them, or one of them, is this a mid-season thing? If things don't go well, they're four games back. If that becomes six and then eight, I mean, is this something that happens before the end of the season?
I think it could. If it really goes south here, I think John Gibbons will be fired before the end of the summer, just because they're going to, you know, the kind of ritual sacrifice aspect of that.
Yeah.
And, you know, whether they fire Anthopoulos at that point or not, or they wait till, you know, because again, you're going to kind of want to get started on things. Like, I think if this season had started very badly, you know, if they hadn't had that May, you know, I think both of those things could have happened before the 1st of July. You know, and again, I'm not the guys, those guys know it. You know, everybody involved with the team started this season knowing that that was the likely outcome if things didn't go well. You know, nobody's going to be surprised.
Yeah.
And, you know, is that fair? Probably not. You know, would all of us have done the same thing Alex Anthopoulos did in the same situation? I think, I know I would have. And, but you know how it works in sports. And, you know, this was the season for him. You know, he can be a hero this year or he can be the scapegoat. And right now, you know, too many more nights like last night and he's going to be the scapegoat, the fall guy for what happened. You know, his fingerprints are all over this thing. And the corporate masters, you know, it's not so much about the money. What they said was, you know, we'll give you the money, but you better guarantee us a result, and you can't guarantee anything in sports.
Thanks, Steve. We'll let you go. We'll talk to you again on Friday morning.
All right. See you guys.
Thanks, pal. There's Stephen Brunt, brought to you by Eastside Kia, and it's no bull. Receive 0% financing up to 84 months combined with up to $4,000 in discounts. Get a 2014 Rio automatic for just $16,380. Visit eastsidekia.ca. We can react to that when we come back. Right now, 740. Sports at 960, The Fan.
Talking sports in the morning. Sportsnet 960. The Fan.
Better than old King Kong and meaner than a junkyard dog. That Leroy Brown, man.
That's mean.
So mean.
Now, this is a fantastic pull for Artist of the Day. Text line loves it.
Yeah, yeah.
How in the world did we go like 9-10 months without Jim Croce?
It's a great question to which I have no answer.
So where was the inspiration spawned then?
This was, this is something that's it's on my phone a lot.
Okay.
And it comes up through, and it's called a shuffle.
Yes.
I don't know if you're familiar. You can just shuffle all the songs. It's a new thing.
It's as if each song was a card in a deck.
Yeah.
Okay.
And, yeah, I don't know how it never came up. I don't know how we never got to this point, but we are. It is 7:45 on your Tuesday morning. Boomer in the Morning along with Ryan Pinder. The text line is wide open, 960-960 from your mobile phone. Please tell Pinder it is Wimbledon, not Wimbledon.
That's correct.
I think people think you say Wimbledon.
Wimbledon.
It is a D.
Yeah, it's a bad habit I have.
Now, why we were talking about Wimbledon is Alexander Ovechkin was not at Wimbledon, which apparently, according to the update,
big news,
sent the Russian media in just a tizzy.
Frenzy, yeah.
And we find out that she is she's D-O-V'd herself.
D-O-V'd. That's that. Wow.
Yeah.
You just verbed it.
She's un-O-V'd.
I like D-O-V'd. That's fantastic.
So here, I was reading this morning. So this is, I just feel
Maria, like, Maria Kirilenko,
uh-huh,
Russian tennis star, was engaged to Ovechkin. They done. She broke it up.
2012, they got engaged.
She gone.
Now she's decided, meh. That's a bit of a kick in the junk when you're Alexander Ovechkin.
Or it's not. Depends what you're into.
Explain.
Well, sometimes being a single guy has some...
Oh, I see. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sure he's not hanging out in the basement with the lights off. He's right back on the horse, I'm guessing.
No, see, I'm sure he's going to be okay, but it's the embarrassment of being a star athlete
who
gets dumped by his chick.
Just like Wozniacki.
Yeah, I'm sure she was very embarrassed.
Wozniak, whatever the...
Whatever.
Yeah.
Here's the quote from her. What's her name? Kirilenko?
Maria.
Our relationship is over, but I respect Sasha. That's what they call Ovechkin.
Sasha.
But I respect Sasha as a person and as an athlete, and I respectfully wish him further sporting success.
Sporting success.
Ooh.
Not personal like success.
That's cold. She's done with Ovi.
Score 60.
Screw you. Our relationship is over. But I respect you as a person and as an athlete, and I wish you further sporting success. Whoa. So, Ovi, what were you doing, or maybe what weren't you doing?
Who weren't you doing?
What weren't you doing right there, Ovi?
So, Ovi, I wish you sporting success.
How much dough...
And I hope your falls off.
Do you have to make if you're Alexander Ovechkin? I make $9 million every year. And I'm going to make $9 million every year for the next decade. Cars, trips, lifestyle, all of it. I wish you great sporting success. Oof. But in fairness, I mean, look at the dude, right? I'm not exactly a fashion plate myself, I admit it. But if he wasn't Johnny Millionaire,
Yeah.
If he's over at the New Holland dealership firing out parts at the parts desk.
I love your example.
I'm not sure how many dates he's hauling in, given that grill.
I got this crazy friend Alex that sells rotor parts. You'd love him. Mm.
You wouldn't put him at the desk. You'd have him in the back.
Kind of looks like he hit a couple branches on the way out of the ugly tree.
Scaring people.
But here's the thing with her. She's made over $1 million each of the last three tennis seasons on her own.
Yeah.
So she's not exactly in the poorhouse leaning on Alex's dough. Well,
she's okay, right? A couple million? He's like, I make that by Christmas.
Yeah, but I
make that by American Thanksgiving.
That's true. But she's got to have some serious dough with the old endorsements.
So who's she? That's my question.
If you have any insight on the Russian gossip, text us 960-960. Right. Who is Maria Kirilenko?
Yeah. Whose bed were his boots under? What?
Sort of whistling there.
It'll be nice when we get to the new studio. I would think we'll be free of this.
Are we in there? When are we in there?
It's a delayed. A little delayed.
What?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, there's been a delay.
No. Here?
Small delay.
Here.
Yeah. Small delay.
So how were you alerted to this?
No! God, please, no!
Yeah. An email.
So we have to spend more time in this sewage hole.
I think like another week.
That's not that bad.
Mid-August is now looking like the target date.
Yeah, we're going to have to push back some of the move-in dates.
I don't know if I'd be making fun of it, because I think this is a very stressful thing for other people.
Not the Rocket's fault. He doesn't build studios. I mean, clearly this isn't on the Rocket, but he has to break the news. Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry,
I just wouldn't be making fun. Because I think tempers might be short.
Well, it's a very good point. I'm just very excited about the new studio, which we won't want to burn when we work in. This one, I would love to bring a Molotov cocktail to our final show.
That's harsh. Stampeders Eskimos this coming Thursday night. We talked to Huffnagel a little bit earlier on. Obviously, no John Cornish. There will be no Keon Raymond. Juwan Simpson sounds like he's going to be fine. Daron Mayo gets in. I was a little bit surprised this morning to look. I guess maybe I'm not paying close enough attention. But when I think of Mike Riley, he's been around. Seen him in BC. Now we've seen him in Edmonton for a couple of years. Doesn't strike me as being this rushing quarterback. Doesn't seem like a guy that's comfortable out of the pocket. I just think he's a big, strong, I'm throwing the ball type of a guy. I'll scramble if I have to. But he is the top rushing quarterback in the Canadian Football League right now.
Is he Russian? I didn't know he was Russian.
He is sixth in yards, 199, which is, I mean, that's better than Stefan Logan, more than Matt Walter, more than Hugh Charles.
He's moving the ball.
Yeah. So certainly something that they're going to have to keep an eye on. And he, along with Darius Bowman, they've got something nice kind of going. Bowman right now, I think, second in receiving yards. Yeah, he's got 312, four touchdowns.
It's all right.
It's a good Eskimo team, boy. It's a good one. And I know I look forward to it. Do you anticipate watching your first Stampeder game of the year this Thursday?
Hey, how many games have you been to at McMahon this year? Be honest. If you're gonna put me on the grill, you got to man up and answer.
I don't hardly ever go to games.
So zero.
Right.
So 1-0 Pinder.
No. How many have you watched?
I was at McMahon when the Owls were here.
Okay.
When they allowed their only offensive touchdown against of the season in junk time to the Calgarian Lumbala, rumbled in from like the 2 or 3.
I notice. There's not been an answer to the question, which I've directly asked. How many games have you watched this season?
Okay, so week one, it was Alouettes. I was there, so I watched that one.
Well, let's do this.
Week two, they had the bye.
They have a 3-0 record.
Week three.
So I believe that's three games. Mm-hmm.
So the highlights of the Argonauts.
Montreal, Toronto, Hamilton.
Been very busy. They play Friday, Saturday nights. And that's kind of
right.
Stampede Saturday.
Right, yeah.
You know, Cowboys tent. Didn't have TVs in there.
Is that what it is?
That's what it was that day.
I see.
And then I had the coaching conference in Vancouver last weekend.
Yeah.
So that tied me up there. I'll be happy to be tuning into my second live appearance of the Stampeders.
Oh, so you're going to the game or are you just going to be watching?
I'll be tuning in.
Okay, tuning in.
Live. I'm not going to watch the highlights. Probably won't even PVR it. Watch it live.
Really?
I'll text you.
Yeah.
Just like Elliot Freeman when he's doing his hot stove. You just bothering him texting. I'll do that to you. Watching. Hey, look at that number 96. He's a big boy.
Well, because what I was going to say is make sure this one you should watch.
Oh, this is
going
to be a good one.
Because, I mean, not only is it your job, but it's also should be a very good football game.
And it's not against a crappy team from the East. Let's be honest. Okay. The other two were not sexy matchups.
That's right. No, it's still your job. But, this should be, in spite of whether it's your job or not, and it is your job. And it is your job. You would probably, as a football fan in general, would enjoy this game.
Oh, you know, I'm a huge footy fan. I was spending all my time over the last month watching to get ready for World Cup reports with Tommy Wingles.
That's right.
My job.
Yeah.
Tommy Wingles.
That's right.
Tommy Wielden.
Oh, boy. So there you go.
I was exhausted. I was fatigued with all the World Cup footy I was watching.
Whether you're a fan or whether it's a job, you should probably watch this game as it's going to be a good one. Now, you wanted to talk about John Gibbons.
Yeah, well, we talked with Brunt, and he sort of said, look, this guy's in the line of fire, which... A, makes sense because of the record, but B, probably isn't a result of major wrongdoing. He hasn't committed huge crimes against humanity. He hasn't made poor decisions. He's platooning guys, making sure they're up against righties or lefties, whichever they're better at. He doesn't mess around yanking guys too soon, often as starters. It seems like he's done a pretty good job.
Pretty standard stuff.
Yeah, he hasn't been exceptional, but he's a manager. He can't go out there and hit, and he can't go pitch. And he's not a freaking spirit healer or whatever. He can't go cure injuries.
Spirit healer.
I don't know what that is. Faith healer? I don't know. Something.
Keep carrying.
So it's probably not on him, but yeah, he probably could get fired. And would anyone be shocked? No. But it was funny at the end of May, everyone was heaping praise all over this team. Myself, everyone. 21-9. And Gibbons was asked, oh boy, you know, this must feel great. He's like, oh, you know, last time I got 20 wins, I ended up getting fired that season. In a month, of course. 20 in a month.
Right.
And it's just kind of funny that, again, if you look at small sample sizes in baseball, they can be misleading. So are they 21-9 pace good? Absolutely not. Are they going to be as bad as they've been the last 2 weeks? No, of course not. They're missing three of their best players, right? Brett Laurie's been gone for a while. Edwin's out.
But see, this is
Jose's hobbled.
This is the discussion
injuries, I get
that
it.
We always have at the start of the season. When, yeah, but they're not going to be as hurt as they were last year. There's no guarantees they're not going to be as hurt as they were the last year.
Well, you knew they weren't going to lose three starting pitchers in a week. That happened to them last week.
Right.
Or 2 years ago, whatever the case was, in terms of a starting rotation, three-fifths of it gone to injury. That wasn't going to happen again. This year, it's been the bats that have been hurt, and there were some injuries last year to the bats. But when you lose Encarnacion and Laurie, you get exposed. They miss Rasmus a ton this year. Not that he was great, but he still hits home runs. Are there issues with this team? Yes. Are they cooked in this division? No. Does it look good? Not necessarily. They're four games back. I mean, people are saying, oh, look out for Boston. Watch out for Boston. They're 7.5 games back. What do you mean look out for Boston? The Jays are three games better than them, or two now after last night. And I get it because they're hot right now. But the Jays were hot in May. Who's to say they won't be hot in August?
But the thing of it is, right? If you're putting to bed the Red Sox, but the Jays have this lifeline. Oh, they're fine. They're starting. It's going to be August here right away.
Yes. No. Will they be better with Edwin back? Yes, they will. Come on. There's
Dude.
No one in their lineup that replaces him.
Oh, okay.
So just play along with me.
No, here. They should be. Will they be? I don't know. Because it's not like they haven't had Encarnacion for the last 2 months.
They've missed him recently, but you're right. They had a rough stretch with him there. Does Brett Laurie improve team defense? Absolutely. Can he hit better than Juan Francisco? Absolutely. Francisco's turned into a pumpkin. He got hot for a month. He's been useless since. So there are reasons for encouragement. Is Aaron Sanchez going to give you more than Sergio Santos, who got put on waivers yesterday? Let's hope so. Is Marcus Stroman adding to this team? Absolutely. He's been their best starter. So it's not the end of the world is all I'm saying. Because those who temper our expectations and say they're going to blow it when they were hot in May, they want to stand up and say, we were right. But the same logic they apply that this isn't sustainable can be applied here. They aren't this bad.
All I say is that it feels like it's the same refrain every year. They were hurt last year. They won't be hurt this year. And then they get hurt again. So, well, that was
absolutely
an anomaly. I mean, you can't be that hurt again. And then they get hurt again. I mean, here they are again with injury trouble being the major crutch trotted out as to why they're struggling.
And they could be out of the woods in a couple weeks. They could.
Sure they could.
So it's just a matter
Or they could be right now as close to the division lead as they will be for the rest of the season.
Absolutely possible. Yep. But it isn't the kind of injury trouble last year that was guys done for the year, guys done for the year, guys done for the year. The light at the end of the tunnel is they will get Edwin back. They will get Brett Laurie back, who's now throwing with three fingers and a thumb, not full hand, right? Like he's taking reps. He's not that far away. So it isn't as dire as last year. It's not.
Yet.
Not yet.
Shit.
And they better hang around because I'm going to Chicago and Milwaukee to watch him.
See,
in a month.
There it is. And there it is. I don't blame you. I'd be the same way.
Like, give us a bloody pennant race once every two decades, please.
Jeff Snyder of the Calgary Roughnecks. He's a champion. We're going to talk to him coming up at about 8:20. A huge win for our country in the game of lacrosse, and he was front and center. We'll get into it with Snides at about 20 minutes time. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.